Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the Ides of June, Anno Domini 2013, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman filling in for Dave Enright,
who is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. And I'm excited to say that this week, The hangout on air actually started on time. So unless there's some glitches, there is almost
don't
every
stop.
Week.
Shut up. Don't jinx it.
All right. Let's start with the news. And while I'm reading the news, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Apple's first press event of 2013 had plenty to offer in terms of new announcements. In case you missed it or want to relive it all, here's a roundup of some of the news from the Worldwide Developers 2013 thing, because we don't really have time for all of it. Apple says its retail stores now bring in 1 million daily visitors to its 407 locations in 14 countries. The company revealed it has paid out over $10 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars to third-party developers, half of that in the last year alone. After initially joking that the new version of OS X would be called Sea Lion, Apple revealed that Mavericks is 10.9 names, indicating a shift from cats to names associated with California. Except the Mavericks are in Dallas. I don't know what that's about.
It's surfing, dude.
Oh, dude, it's surfing.
It's actually named after a dog, too. So.
How gnarly is that? The new version of OS X 10.9 features tabs for Finder. It has tagging. It's better support for multiple displays. Using AirPlay, you can use an Apple TV box to run an extra display. The battery life of your Mac should be much better under Mavericks. The dog was named Mavericks with a plural.
No, the dog was Maverick singular, but when these three old surfer dudes back in the 60s found this spot in California, the dog liked it most, so they called it Maverick Spot. Now, apparently there's this underwater ridge where
So it should be a possessive.
Yeah, but we don't want to put the
and you didn't
apostrophe
know that,
in there.
You didn't know any of that until somebody at Apple told you. Yeah. Okay.
But so it's a really great surfing spot. This underwater ridge apparently generates 20 to 30 foot swells all the time, no matter what the weather.
I don't care.
You would if you're a surfer.
I would if I were a surfer. The battery life of your Mac should run much better under Mavericks. Dude, reducing CPU usage up to 72%. The new OS can also rapidly compress inactive memory in order to make space available to applications. This, Apple says, results in a 1.5-time improvement in waking a system from standby. Apple unveiled a new version of its Safari browser with improved browser memory usage and JavaScript handling, while an App Naps feature will pause the processes and tabs that are running particularly battery-draining websites or web apps in order to improve battery life. iCloud Keychain is a new password management app that stores your passwords, credit card numbers, Wi-Fi passwords, account information. It syncs them all to trusted devices, and all information is encrypted with 256-bit AES, which was great for 1987. OS X notifications are improved. iOS apps can now send push notifications to your Mac if you enable the feature. Calendar has a new look with weather information, location suggestions, and links to Apple Maps built in. Apple Maps, which really is the one thing everybody needs on their device, is Apple Maps. It's built into Mavericks, complete with the 3D flyover feature and the ability to make a phone call to find out where the hell you really are from your iPhone. The new MacBook Air promises all-day battery life. The 11-inch model promises 9 hours of battery life, and the 13-inch model promises a whole 12 hours. That's, of course, half a day rather than all day, but we get Apple's point. The new Mac Pro is a small black cylindrical machine that will be made in the USA. It's powered by a new Intel Xeon processor, ECC memory with up to 2x faster performance, PCIe-based flash memory with a 1 gigabit write speed. Apple says that it's 10 times faster than any previous Mac Pro. The device is expandable over Thunderbird 2. The internal graphics processor can handle 3 4K devices, displays rather. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. Apple's latest announcements. Your choices are, I'll be honest, I wept with joy. I'll be honest, I yawned. It was okay, but no magic. And I could not care less. Of course, knowing our crowd, 34 total votes, I could not care less was the first choice by far, followed a distant second by it's okay, but no magic. And of course, you can vote at soundbites.org. And when you're done with that, head on over to the forums where you can leave your own comment, because I know you have something to say about this. It's the forum is titled 15 June 13, Apple's Latest Announcements. So, what do you think of Apple's announcements? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. By the way, you can find those numbers on our website at soundbites.org and on the great Jazz 90.1 website at jazz901 or jazz901.org. Exactly.
How many times did you breathe during that?
Twice. No, okay. We'll get to it after we chat a little bit about that. If you're on the phone, stay on the phone. If you're not on the phone, give us a call.
It was a very uncharacteristic move for Apple to basically pre-announce the new Mac Pro. But after last year's WWDC, when the Mac Pro
Worldwide Developers Conference,
which actually they think is the longest developer conference in the tech industry. It's the 24th year they've been having it. The Mac Pro.
So wait, they've been doing the WWDC as long as we've been doing sound bites.
Just about, yep.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow.
But the company's been around 35 years, so for those first 10 years, they didn't do one.
I've been around 60-plus years, whatever the number is. I don't know what year it is. It doesn't matter. Go ahead.
So after last year's keynote, when they didn't announce a new Mac Pro, which is their high-end workstation-class machine for video editors and professional people, people started emailing Tim Cook, you know, what about the Mac Pro? And he said, well, we've got something great coming for you next year. Well, next year's here and it's still not here yet. So if they went past another WWDC and didn't say anything, it would have been, you know, a huge uproar in the Mac community.
Well, but they did say something. I mean, they brought out their little cray.
Right. Yeah. So by pre-announcing the Mac Pro, which will be available later this year, they've put to rest a lot of the concerns. One of the neat things about it is it's got a lot of I/O. It's got 6 Thunderbolt 2 ports on it that you can hook 6 devices each. So you can have 36 devices connected, including the 3 4K monitors you mentioned and RAID arrays and hard drives and all sorts of things. But it has no internal expansion. And that's the big thing on the Mac Pro Tower now. You've got 4 hard drive bays and 6 PCIe slots. 5 slots.
So if you have old drives that you would like to put into this thing, oh well.
Right.
You buy a case.
You buy an external chassis for it. Or people that want the speed need the Thunderbolt. And the current Mac Pro doesn't have Thunderbolt on it, which and actually now Intel's got Thunderbolt 2 out, so they missed a whole generation. So 20 gigabytes per second throughput on Thunderbolt 2 is one of the ways it handles the 4K monitors. And the size of it is, it's 1/8 the volume. It's about the size of a double paper towel roll, you know, less right. than 10 inches tall. So they went from this huge giant silver, you know, box to a little tiny black cylinder.
It does look pretty. I will say that for it for sure.
It's apparently patterned, after a Japanese garbage can.
Of course it is.
Last year,
everybody's been saying it looks like a garbage can.
Well, last year when the Apple Smart Cover came out that rolled up in that neat way, people found a Japanese tatami mat, a sleeping mat that looks exactly like it and folds up pretty much the same way. And so they're figuring, well, Johnny Ive, you know, on one of his vacations in Japan, got inspired by these designs. So people have started posting the link to Amazon Japan. Or whatever store it is in Japan where you can buy these things for only 3,000 yen, you know, which is what, like $30?
Right.
So it looks like the Mac Pro. So you can have one now. Because one thing they didn't pre-announce was the price. But we expect it to be in the $2,000 range, like the current Mac Pro is.
Right.
Super high-end whiz bang for those very high-end people that want that sort of power. So Hollywood movie editors, you know, have racks and racks of processing power to render their movies. In fact, they one of the private sessions they had at the developer conference was with Pixar, showing off some of the rendering on Monsters University coming out. If you have a developer ID, you can log in and watch those developer videos. That was the other thing we talked about when it happened, but the conference sold out in 71 seconds. They have 5,000 tickets available for the Moscone Center. So Apple was posting videos every day of all the sessions. So if you couldn't make it, if you couldn't buy tickets in that 71 seconds, then you could still watch it. But being able to interact with the thousands of Apple engineers there, if you're an Apple developer, you know, this is the place to go. And what's interesting is Google I/O is what, the week before, 2 weeks before?
Yep.
And everyone was mad that Google didn't give away the latest new hardware like they have been at the last few Google I/Os. You know, you went to one last year, you got a free Nexus phone, and what was it, a phone, a tablet, and something else that... All the Google stuff they were announcing. And
all of the things I didn't get because I wasn't there.
Right. And this year they didn't give away anything.
Right. Which not.
So that was the big news from Google I/O is you didn't get anything for free.
Yeah, right. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is our friend Carl, all the way from Pottsville, PA. Potsdam. Wait.
Maybe I was on mistake.
Potts.
What?
PA?
Yeah, it's Pottsville, I think.
Okay.
Well, help us out here, Carl.
Okay, it's Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Pottstown, I know it was one of the ones I knew it wasn't Potsdam.
One of those.
What's up?
So that guy Potts really got around, didn't he?
What can we do for you, Carl?
I have a question about wireless technology.
Sure.
About 40 or 50 years ago, you could go out to a local consumer electronics store and buy a pair of wireless speakers. And, you know, hook them up to your stereo, a little transmitter would come with them, hook them up to your stereo in one room, put the speakers in another, and listen to your stereo. Now, today we have Bluetooth, which I realize is a digital transmission and the old technology is an analog system, but my question is this, from the non-technical end user's point of view today, what is better about Bluetooth than about that 50-year-old technology?
Theoretically, it's cheaper and uses less energy.
Okay, and that's about it?
That's pretty much it. It's Bluetooth is being used in ways that it was never originally designed for. Bluetooth is technically a PAN, P-A-N, a personal area network. We have local area networks, we have wide area networks, and Bluetooth is a personal area network. It's a very short distance, theoretically.
30 feet or so.
Yeah, it's fast enough for the sorts of things that were around when it was designed. So you could wear a Bluetooth watch. You could wear Google Glass, and it would connect via Bluetooth. You know, that sort of stuff. Headphones.
Up until now, it's been keyboards and mice are the common Bluetooth peripherals.
Right, but we've moved it out to things like keyboards and mice. But now they're using it even for things like speakers, which can be within 30 feet, but aren't really designed to be in the next room.
And some of the wireless speakers now, I was just telling Nick before the show, we've got a Sonos system in our office now. They use Wi-Fi in the 2.4 gigahertz band. So you get greater range yet. Wi-Fi generally capable of a couple hundred feet. And being able to wirelessly put speakers anywhere. It used to be when you were building your house, you know, in the last 20 years or so, you'd make sure that you had every room wired for cable TV and every room wired for speakers. And now we're getting more and more into wireless, so we don't have to have all those wires running. Wired is usually better, but in terms of speed and capability and bandwidth. But wireless is just so much more convenient that that's sort of the way we're trending.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. I knew something was going to go wrong.
The Hangout died?
No, I logged into Google Drive to write up the calls, it logged me out of Google Hangouts. So I logged back in. It put me back in, which apparently it didn't actually lose anything, except it turned off my microphone.
It's not different accounts, is it?
No! I don't get it.
I run into that sometimes because I have a personal Google account, and I have a company Google account, and I have to remember which one I'm logged into.
I'm definitely using all the same Google account. I hate everything technology. Just so you know.
It makes the day so interesting.
Yeah.
May you live in interesting times.
Yeah, right. May you have interesting technology. Ooh, that's a bad one. All right, our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's
Hi, guys. I have a dumb phone, not a smartphone, so that's not my area, and I actually have no idea when you guys are talking about smartphones, especially...
Yeah, we don't have any idea either.
An iPhone 4S. Now, my friend... Valena Shepard from Second
sure.
Life, who lives down in Virginia, called me and she says, I can't listen to sound bites anymore. What do I do? So I hear as your show is starting up this app from the iTunes store. All she has to do is get the app from the iTunes store, and then because she was getting podcasts from iTunes, I guess, or somewhere. I don't know where she was getting the podcasts
from.
Yeah,
you can get the podcasts through iTunes or through our website, and those are delayed, basically. I usually get them uploaded Saturday night, Sunday afternoon. But if you want to listen live, you can go to the Jazz 90.1 website, or you can download the Jazz 91 app from either the iTunes store for iOS or the Android store. The Google Play store for Android.
Right, the Google Play store. There's also the fact that I've downloaded probably a dozen different online radio apps, and Jazz 90.1 is in most of them.
Hmm.
So there's iHeartRadio is a big one.
Not that one. And a bunch of the others. Oh, did we answer your question?
No, not quite.
Okay, then stay on the line because we have to take a quick break.
Okay.
But we will come back and answer more of your question. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, Dennis from Rochester, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right.
Linda Wildman.
And you're listening to Sound Bites, and we have Dennis from Rochester still on the line. So Dennis, Valena is having trouble with actually hearing the show live.
Well, I don't know if it's live. This is the part I wanted to ask you the questions about. She said she was getting it as a podcast from iTunes. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean it's live, or does that mean she listens to it at her convenience?
Oh, that's a later at her convenience. Steve, as he said, he uploads that Saturday night, Sunday afternoon, sometime like that. What happens is we record the show. Steve records the show while it's happening, and then he edits it to take out commercials and unfortunately leaves in all my mistakes. I've been talking to him about that, but nothing's been done yet.
Well, the show would be, 5 minutes long.
Oh, cow! All right. Thank you very much. I'll set him up and he'll hit him.
In terms of the podcast, she's saying she cannot get it from iTunes anymore. And is that a paid thing that she has to pay, a subscription that she has to pay for?
No. Here's the deal.
The server crashed.
Our server crashed. And when I rebuilt it, things are in a different place because it's on a different server because I'm not using that company anymore.
Oh.
I'm back to Jerry again. And so what happened was I put in a link that theoretically is supposed to forward people to the new link.
Okay.
Apparently it's not doing that.
We may have taken too long because I don't see us in the store at all.
Ah, okay.
So I'll republish to the store.
The new one.
Right.
All right.
But you can get the podcasts from the Soundbites website.
Okay. Which is I don't know about podcasts, but on my desktop from time to time I would just go to your archives and download the show using Windows Media Player.
And that's basically the same thing. You go to soundbites.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look down the page on the new site, about halfway down the page, you'll have to scroll. People forget you can scroll.
Okay.
Well, I hear all the time, the podcasts are gone. No, I'm looking right at them. But there's the list of the podcasts. You can subscribe through iTunes right there. You can download episodes right there. So it's all available. Also remind her that we're in Second Life every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, which is 6 p.m. Linden time.
Okay. No more. Was it Friday nights that you guys used to do or something? Or
we were there much more often than we are now, but somehow or other we ended up with lives.
Well, it used to be Friday, and we did move to Sunday a while ago.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the podcast. Let me make sure I know what I'm talking about when I call her back. There was a podcast link in the iTunes store,
yeah.
Store, but it's not there, or it's not working?
It seems to not be there anymore.
It broke when the server died, and so what she didn't know was to get the new link.
And she will find that new link where, if she doesn't go to Soundbites?
At soundbites.org, on our website. It is not in the iTunes store yet.
Oh, okay.
But it will be. However, all she needs to do is go to soundbites.org, scroll down the page in the far right column, she'll eventually see the podcasts.
Okay.
Click on that link, the Soundbites Radio Podcast, it's in green, and when she gets there, right across the top, it says podcast, and directly under that, it says subscribe, and you can click either RSS, which is the generic feed that most people use, and then iTunes, which would connect her directly with her iTunes and make it all magically happen.
Okay.
So iTunes is a media player like your Winamp.
Ah, okay.
iTunes is also a store.
Jazz 90.1 app, would that accomplish the same thing as the
and also let you listen live Saturdays at noon.
Would she have a choice of listening live or at her convenience with the Jazz 90.1 app?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate your time.
There you go. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
We're always delighted, if not actually thrilled, to be able to bring someone else back into the fold. I realized that during the time that the site was down, a lot of people left. They're coming back now. I also realize some people are having a little bit of trouble with the CAPTCHA, but I must tell you that we used to get thousands upon thousands of spammers logging in and signing in and trying to get into the forums every day, literally day. And now we don't because the CAPTCHA keeps them all out. So I'm very happy with that. Our next caller, Joanne from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's up?
I'm having trouble with Microsoft Word. And it says Microsoft Word is not responding. And then I'll close the program down and try to start it over, and sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. And I don't know if it has anything to do with Google Cloud or Google Docs.
No, they're completely separate things.
Okay.
What does this happen regularly?
Yes.
And is it on one specific document that you use a lot, or is it on any document?
Quite often it's a document that I've had before and I want to add to it or change it, and it, like, freezes and I can't even type in it.
How old is your machine and how old is your copy of Word?
I've tried to look for my Word. If I had a CD, I can't find it. But the machine's only, well, maybe 2 years old.
Well, 2 years shouldn't be bad if it's a new copy of Word on it.
It's possible it's a corrupt document.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Generally, what we tell people in this instance, the first thing to try is to, when you finally do get that document open, save it under a different name.
Yep, I've been trying that.
And that's not helping either.
It'll work for a little bit, and then it stops again.
Try a select all and copy.
Okay.
Make a new document and paste.
Okay.
It's also possible. Okay. It's also possible that you've been caught by one of the many Word viruses.
Mm. Okay.
A number of them are very, very badly written, and they try to infect Word documents.
Mm-hmm.
and cannot do it well and therefore corrupt the documents.
Okay.
So make sure your antivirus is up to date.
Okay.
In fact, maybe you should dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com.
I know, I've tried that, and I've never got all the way through it.
Well, have you not gotten through it because it's long and tedious, or has something gone wrong?
I think something's gone. It's been a year or so since I tried it.
Well, that may be part of your problem. Many viruses will try to stop the Tango from working.
Okay.
The other thing you might want to do is take your machine to a reputable dealer, have them do it for you, and so it gets done once right, and then from then on it should be easier for you. But that's, if it's not, if the document re-corrupts regularly and the version of Windows and the machine you're on are not old, then my suspicion falls on some form of malware, some virusy thing.
Okay, that's what I needed, because I thought it was maybe connected to Google Docs or something. Or
no, the two are completely unrelated in any way.
Okay. Well, I do have a question about that.
Yeah.
So I save a document several times while I'm doing it.
On Google Docs?
I think it is, or Google Cloud. I'm not sure. I seem to have both of them.
Well, the Google Docs is Google Cloud.
Okay.
It's a thing called Drive, and you use it through your browser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everything you write is saved to the cloud in your Google Drive.
Yes.
And that way you can go to a different computer and see those same files.
How do I retrieve them? If I just go on the other computer.
Well, you can do it back on your computer too.
Okay.
Go to drive.google.com.
Sign in. The same username and password.
Right. Just like you sign in to create a document, you sign in to edit a document.
Yeah.
And any machine you do that on, of course, on any computer anywhere, you want to make sure it's a secure computer.
Yeah.
You can log in to drive.google.com with your credentials, your username and password, and you will see all of your documents.
Okay. Because some of the time it's the trouble of, it won't let me go on, so I don't know how to get it back out of Google Drive then.
Well, when you say it won't let you go back on, what do you get, an error message?
Yeah, that's the Microsoft Word's not responding. I can't.
Well, the Microsoft Word and Google Drive are two entirely different things.
Okay.
One works only through the browser. Google Docs works only through the browser. So if you're not in your browser, you're not using Google Docs.
Okay.
If you're using Word, then it's something happening on your computer.
Okay.
Or you may have installed Office 365. Did someone do that for you?
I'm not sure.
Well, see, that's another reason to take it to a reputable dealer and have them straighten this out.
Okay.
Because Office 365 is Microsoft's attempt to respond to Google Docs.
Their own cloud. Apple announced their own iWork in the cloud, too. Everyone's doing cloud documents now.
Right. And so it may be that you're in a cloud, but not the Google cloud.
Okay.
So really, you need to have somebody sit in front of the machine and explain the nuances of what you actually have.
Okay. I shall do that. So if I go to Google, drive.google.com?
Drive.google.com.
Drive.google.com. Okay. All right. I will give this a try then.
Good for you. I'm very happy.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
I know in the Mac version of Office 2011, the latest version for Mac, there was an update that added Office 365 awareness.
That's why I'm saying she might have that.
Right. Office 2013 for Windows has that built in.
Right.
But I don't know if they added it. What was the last version for Windows?
2012.
Was there 2012 Office?
Wasn't there?
2010 maybe. 2010.
Maybe.
So they might have done an update to the previous version to make it cloud aware. So when she does save, it may be trying to save it in the Microsoft cloud.
And giving her an error message there.
And if she's never signed up for the Microsoft cloud,
right.
It may not. That
right.
may be where it's coming
but
from.
But see, again, this is one of those things where somebody's got to be actually sitting in front of the machine. So if she takes it to a reputable dealer and they actually show her what she's got, that'll do that right there. The cloud is getting to be the place to do everything. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One is it's in the long run, it's much more secure, theoretically, because they will back it up. They make sure it's there, blah, 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 blah. Most people, and really it's not everybody, but most people never use all the power in something like Word anyway. It's the 80-20 rule. Yeah. 80% of the people use 20% of the power. So when you have something like Google Docs, which has 50% of the power, they're still not using it all. That's another reason to do it. The third reason is that you can use it on multiple devices without worrying, did I move that document over? If I'm at work, I'm at home, I'm on my tablet, I'm on my laptop, I'm on my desktop. You don't have to worry about any of that.
And it's nice to be able to collaborate with
people. And that's the big thing.
Especially in a small business where you have several people working on the same document. Right. Or even at home, you know, mom and dad can each be working on, you know, the Christmas card list.
Yep.
Or the grocery list, and each on their own computer or on their tablet or on their smartphone. And actually, going back to the previous caller, basically all a smartphone is a little tiny computer that makes phone calls. So right. It's a cell phone that can get on the internet, and you can look at web pages and get your email and do other types of things besides just make a call.
Right.
And in fact, most people with smartphones don't use it for phones anymore.
Yeah, right. Very few. Very rarely.
It's messaging and email. And in fact, email is old hat. It's messaging is what the youngsters are doing
people
now.
People my age do email.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, I will tell you, I collaborated on a document with some folks that I'm working with. Three of us were in the same room, and one of us was actually on another continent. And the four of us were using Google Docs and Google Hangout, and it was seamless.
Yep.
We were all working on exactly the same document simultaneously, chatting back and forth about what we were doing. It was astonishing. It was great.
The old way to do that used to be you'd pass the single file around, and you'd have change revision lists. And it was always funny at the office I was working at is you'd see one person make a change and another person change it back to the way it was before. So you have dueling editors all fighting over exactly what they want it to look
right,
like.
Right.
And then when it got to me, I had to type it all up and make it look pretty.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Linda from Greece on the line. Welcome, Linda. What's up?
Hey, I got a question. I've got an Android phone and a Nexus 7 tablet.
Nice.
I go to certain websites, and it says I need Adobe Flash. Okay. I know Adobe Flash is no longer in the mix here, but what do I do? Is there an alternative to use so I can get on these websites?
There are some alternative apps. I don't remember any offhand because we all gave up on them, where it's a different browser, so you don't use the browser on the computer. You're basically using a remote browser, so it does Flash on a different computer and then sends you the new video.
Okay, instead now on my Nexus 7, I assume it's using Chrome, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the one that comes with it, but of course you can download dozens of different browsers for it.
Okay, but now my question is, which one is the best? Because I saw a lot of them, and I thought to myself, I'm not sure which one is the best for what I've got.
Yeah.
The bottom line is none of them. Flash didn't work well on tablets because it's very processor hungry and very power hungry.
Okay.
And so that's why Apple never put it on their tablets, and Adobe gave up on it.
Okay.
Yeah, Adobe has stopped making
it. Yeah, that I know.
There is a there's one called Photon, Photon. There's another one called Puffin, Puffin.
That sounds familiar. They may have an Apple version too.
Yeah.
Well, this is a Nexus 7 Android tablet, so.
Yeah, Puffin might be your best bet at this point.
Okay. Why aren't these, like, CBS.com, NBC.com, when are they going to realize that Adobe Flash is no longer available?
Many of those companies have released their own apps, and they want you to use their app and not the web, because then they can control the advertising and what you see in their app a lot better.
In other words, just download their app, because there's a lot of programs that I don't get a chance to see, and they say full episodes.
Yep.
I go there and they say, well, I'm sorry, you can't do it on this. You need such and such.
Right, yeah, you have to do it on your computer or you do it on their app on your tablet.
Okay, so I download CBS and I download NBC app. Ah, okay. That sounds good. I know, because I thought to myself, when is this new HTML5 going to be?
Yeah, that's one of the replacements for Flash. Is HTML is the language of the web, and version 5 is the next version of that language. And it has animation and it has video built in. Those are two of the big things that Flash is used for.
Now, when is that going to be readily available to everybody?
It already is. It's the people running those websites are lacking. What's a polite word?
They're slow getting there. here's the deal, Linda. Every modern browser does HTML5. Better or worse, as every browser always does. Depending on where you are, for example, YouTube used to be all Flash.
Uh-huh.
Any new things being uploaded are now HTML5, but the old ones haven't all been converted and may never be converted. So there's always going to be a combination there. You know, there's a million YouTube videos uploaded every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's actually not an exaggeration. That's a real number.
And so you use the YouTube app, and it works fine, even the old ones.
Oh, right. I use the YouTube app because I've got a lot of things on there. Yeah, I use the YouTube app.
Right, and that's the point. It will do the Flash as necessary,
yeah.
Even though the browser won't. So that's why Steve said you need the apps for each company, and that's what they want you to use anyway. So they're never really going to make it easy for you to watch anything on the tablet through the browser.
And
they want you to download their app.
Many of those websites, when you go to the website, will pop up, hey, we have an app, you should download that.
Yeah, I know.
And there's occasions I don't want to do that.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure of.
Yep.
There you go.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Linda.
Bye. Yep.
And we're seeing a lot more people doing that and cutting down on their cable TV bill by watching things on the internet directly from the network producers or on places like Netflix and Hulu. And Time Warner and the other cable companies don't like that because you're cutting their bill. You're not paying them as much.
Right.
So a lot of times they're restricting you. One of the big ones is HBO. HBO has an app for Android and iOS, but in order to watch HBO programs on your tablet, you must have a cable television HBO subscription. Even though you're never going to watch it on your TV by chance, you have to have a TV cable subscription with your cable provider in order to use the app on your tablet.
Interesting. Interesting.
Which is annoying.
That's all right. I'm watching all the new stuff on Netflix anyway.
But with Netflix, you have to realize that you may have to wait a few weeks or a few months to get...
No, I meant all their own
Netflix is running their own new original programming now, too.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Rush, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
Oh, hi, guys. I got a quick question. I bought a Nook book from Barnes & Noble. And I downloaded their app onto my Samsung Galaxy S3, okay? And it works fine. So I can read my book on my smartphone. But my wife uses my smartphone many times, and sometimes I don't have access to it. Is there a way to get a Nook book onto the Kindle?
No.
No?
Not that I know.
Not without rooting it.
Here's the thing. They're two rival companies.
Right.
So they're never going to play nicely together. That's why I encourage people to buy something like a Nexus 7, where you can download the Nook app, the Android app, the Amazon Kindle app, the Google Play Books app.
Yep. Same thing on iOS, on the iPad.
Same thing
you
on
can
the
download
iPad.
Everybody's bookstore on it.
Okay.
Now, all there right. are ways that you can convert the Kindle book into a different format, or the Nook book into a different format, and then read it on your Kindle. But that's tedious and annoying. And
yeah,
and
it sounds that way.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the second question, Barnes & Noble, I downloaded it to my computer also, so I thought I could read it on my laptop. And it comes in, I've got Windows 7.
Yeah.
And it comes down as an EPUB extension. Or no, EPUB.
EPUB, yep.
EPUB extension. And my operating system won't read it. It said it's an invalid extension.
You need a program to read EPUB.
Where do I go to get the program?
The internet.
Question.
Okay. One of the big ones on the Mac is Calibre. I'm trying to see if they have a Windows version too. You might know a Windows EPUB program too.
I'm thinking Aldico, but I'm looking up to see if it's available for Windows. You need an EPUB. No, it doesn't look it.
I had a hard time finding it.
Calibre has Windows, Mac, Linux, and iOS.
Yeah, I like Calibre. I've used it before.
Some people are wondering if it should be Calibre.
Calibre or Calibre.
Oh, so Calibre.
Yeah.
You got it.
Oh, okay. So if I go there, I should be able to get...
Yeah, is it what... Steve's about to post a...
get rid of that about frame. Calibre-ebook.com.
Oh,
and I'll get that.
And he'll post the link in a moment.
Okay,
onto our website. But yeah, I actually I really like Calibre or Calibre, or however it's pronounced. I used it for the longest time before I got any kind of tablet. And what's nice about it is it's one of those things that will do the translating for you.
Yep.
You can load an ebook in one format and export it in some other formats. Some are proprietary, but any of the free ones you can do.
Okay. All right, fine. Thank you very much.
All right, have fun.
Yep, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was one of the other things Apple announced is Apple's own iBooks program for the Mac, so you can read a book on your computer. Apparently, the backstory is, why would you want to read a book on your computer? That's what iPads are for. But a lot of us do like reading on our computers, so we'll see how when that comes out too.
Well, and it's kind of interesting. One of the nice things I like about the Kindle is that every Kindle has an email address.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a non-DRM book, you can email it to your Kindle. And it will be there for you. I really kind of like that feature, actually. I used to email people books. Yep. And
that's easier than syncing it with USB on your computer.
Right.
Which you can do also, but
right, but this way it just appears on your computer. It's there. You have it. It's downloadable.
Yep.
Immediately. So it's really a nice thing. I'm very impressed by that. That's one thing that they really did get right. You know, everybody's buying whatever is out there now. It's amazing the infinite variety of readers. There are readers that aren't from Barnes & Noble or from Amazon as well. There are companies making e-readers that are third-party devices. There are a number of places you can download free or inexpensive non-digital restriction management files. Things that aren't locked, so that you can load them onto pretty much any ebook you like. The Wayback Machine has a bunch of ebooks.
Most publishers are releasing ebooks directly. In fact, most authors now are releasing their own ebooks on their own websites. And there was actually at Macworld in January, they did a panel on alternative publishing, and Adam Engst from Tidbits and a couple of other people that have done electronic books forever were talking about how it's changed over the years, and how that an author, a single person writing their own book, publishing it themselves on their own website, he makes more money on selling it on his own website than he does publishing it through the Amazon store. because authors can generate their own buzz. In fact, that's authors have sort of become their own publishers. The concept of a publisher was someone who promoted your book and got it into the bookstores.
Right.
But a lot of people can do that themselves with Facebook and Twitter and the social networking available now. And we've even seen it going the other way around. Some of the ebook authors like Scott Sigler and J.C. Hutchins and Mer Lafferty that I've read, they use their internet popularity to generate a printed book deal. And so now
I've the other way.
I've been waiting for Scott's new book to come out because I listened to all his old books that he's now putting in print. So we're waiting for the sequels to come out in print because we've heard all these already. We need the next one.
I have a friend who's a very popular author and he does not like the way his publicist publicized his last work. He feels that they misrepresented what it is. So he's published his next book.
I've actually talked to authors about the book cover. An artist is commissioned to do the book jacket.
Yep.
And quite often, the artist never reads the book, never meets the publisher, never meets the author, doesn't know anything about it. The publisher says, give me a book with an Amazon holding a sword, wearing leather armor. And it's a book about spaceships.
Right.
Okay. So you have to be a big enough author to be able to request your own artist to do your own book jacket.
What I find is every once in a while, in the dedication to a book, somebody will say, and I want to thank blah, 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 the artist for the cover of this book who actually got it right.
Yep. Yeah, the race is wrong. The gender is wrong.
You know, every once in a while, you look at a book cover. I do it myself, and I'll say, "This person actually read the book. They actually everything is right.
Yep.
The creatures are right. The people are right. The planet is right. The circumstances are right. This you can pick the scene. Even if they didn't read the whole book, they read enough to get to a scene that they put on the cover, and that's unfortunately kind of rare these days." And of course, then there's just the bodice rippers where it's a pirate ship and a woman in most of a dress and a guy in not much pirate shirt and you're done really you're finished.
The bodice rippers.
That's all you need. Yeah.
Every genre has them. Yeah. It's not just romance novels.
That's absolutely true. And of course that's part of it. If you're an author and you have any sort of scene. I don't want to call it a sex scene because you'll start, but a scene that is slightly less than PG, publicists will often seize on that as an easy way to sell.
Yeah.
To pigeonhole the book.
Because when you got people looking at bookshelves, if they do anymore, they're looking at the cover, or more likely they're looking at the spine. So publishers have to really
right.
work better, and authors are, as I mentioned, are doing more and more publicizing themselves.
And I'd like to talk to every single company that has books available on a website. You're doing it wrong. Call me. Seriously, it's horrible. It's horrible. I cannot. I look at a bookstore. They should be able to tell me I already own a book, 'cause they sold it to me. I understand I own a million books, and I don't believe that's an exaggeration at this point between me and my wife. But so I understand when I go to a bookstore and buy an actual piece of dead tree and bring it home, I might buy something that I bought a long time ago. But when I go to a website...
And I hate when I change the cover and you think it's a new book.
Exactly. But when you go to a web bookstore, they should make some indication that you have already read this book. Netflix will tell me I've already watched the movie. Why can't Barnes & Noble and Amazon tell me I've already bought the book?
They do it the other way. When I buy a book, which is
often... They recommend 15 other books, half of which I already have. By the way, don't recommend them to me again.
Or it is a romance novel I bought for my wife and I don't want to buy anymore.
Well, and that's the other part of the problem. On Netflix, we have... And apparently this is now legal to do. We share the account and consequently it's... they have no idea what my taste is. They have no idea. All right, listen, our first hour has gone by miraculously quickly, so we are going to take a slightly longer break, but then we're going to come back and do it all again because we don't think we got it right the first time. So stay tuned. If you haven't called in, please do, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with Steve Ray, with Linda Wildman, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 1 o'clock, and you are listening to Soundbites.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we had a report from Steve. There is a product called EPUB Reader for Firefox that will let you read EPUB books in your browser. There's one for Chrome called Magic Scroll eBook Reader. Another one called Readium. I like that one. Readium. Also EMS EPUB Reader. I suppose you just go to your app store or whatever you call it on your browser and put in ebook reader and you'll see a bunch of that stuff. So that's pretty cool, actually.
Nice.
All right, our next caller is Bob from Springwater, New York. Wow, how are things in Springwater?
Not too bad, Nick. How's everything there?
Well, I don't know. We're stuck in a little brick box. We have no idea what's going on out in the world. The good news is if there's some sort of zombie invasion, we won't even know about it.
Okay. Well, I'll see you next time when we get some coffee up that way, too.
There you go.
I've got an old computer questions. I've got an old Mac Centris, and I've got an old, a Windows XP Home. And I'm looking at a new machine, and I'm wondering what I could use to migrate those files over to a new machine. Would they still run the old Motorola format?
Stone knives and bear claws.
Yeah, it's about right.
No, Apple gave up on the Motorola format about 15 years ago.
I understand that.
They gave up on the IBM format about, 11 years ago.
Yeah.
So pretty much what you're probably going to be stuck doing is on the old machine doing a save as into a common format, you know, like text or even a Word doc file,
right.
And then burning it to a CD,
right.
Unless you've got a USB port on the old computer to use a flash drive. So the old computers don't have USB ports. The new computers don't necessarily have CD drives anymore.
But you can
add an external CD.
If you can convert it to Word and
right.
you can get on the web, you can yeah. go to, for example, your Chrome drive.
Right.
Or, excuse me. Your,
yeah, Chrome won't work on a machine that old.
No, your Google Drive.
Well, I have old Word 4 back on that Apple back then, so that was available at the time.
Yeah.
I also had Claris CAD and think that this is taking it back some down the old
right. yeah, there is.
Once you've got them in a usable format like Word, if you have a network connection, you can put them in Dropbox. You can upload them to Google Drive.
Even a direct network connection. Now, I say a direct network connection between the two computers, that probably won't work either because the file services are too disparate.
Putting right. a patch between the two.
Right.
Yeah.
Shoot.
So burning to a CD on the old one and then using a CD drive on the new one might work.
Right.
The old one
didn't have a CD writer. It only had a CD reader at the time. This was a Centris 650.
CD readers. I have seen USB floppy drives, so you can put it on a floppy disk on the old machine and use a USB floppy drive on the new machine. Those are hard to find, too.
Seriously, it's better to use something like Dropbox. You're done.
Nope, you're not going to find Dropbox for the old OS.
No.
You do it through the browser.
You're not going to find a Ajax browser. It's going to be HTML1, raw HTML on a browser that old.
Right. You had Mosaic back then, so this is back that time. So, you know, HTML1 was about the only thing you had that...
If you have your own website or a friend with one, you can FTP it.
Find a computer that's only 10 years old versus your 20-year-old one, and use
that's
a bridge.
My Dell there, that still has USB 1 on it. So
that would work, So put it on a floppy disk on the Centris, using the floppy drive on the Dell to write it to a USB flash drive.
Right.
That'll work.
Yeah, I've got some problems with that one there. I hit the wrong site and got some ransomware on it, so I've got to clean that machine up somehow.
Yeah, that's nasty, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's one of the dangers in waiting too long.
20 years from now, don't wait so long.
Oh, come on now. They want my money on those things here. I'm trying to save a few bucks I got out here.
I get it.
Although,
I'm not saying stop using it. I'm saying transfer it sooner.
Yeah.
Although for the power of a Centris, you could get an iPad that would be much more powerful.
Oh, yep. I know. But nowadays, you can use it with Wi-Fi, but you'd still need to have a data plan with some sort of like Verizon or AT&T or whatever.
Nope, that's only for cellular, not for Wi-Fi.
Right. If you have Wi-Fi, it's just Wi-Fi.
Right. Right, so I could use like the smartphones using Wi-Fi without having that need to use a data plan or anything like that.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because same thing.
You know,
I've got
Verizon out here, and I'm using my cell phone as a I don't have a landline to my place, so I've got a tower across the lake from me. So
that works.
But I'm also using satellite from DishNet and be able to get my internet around too.
Right.
See, that's still an issue with broadband in the rural areas, is that it's not available, and if it is, it's really expensive.
Yeah, it's not cheap, no, but it's country living.
Yep.
It's country living, baby.
I'll see you all. You take care now.
Thanks.
You too.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of the classic games we used to play back in the 90s, Marathon and Duke Nukem, have all been re-released on iPad and Android. Because the current tablets are just as powerful and probably more so than those 10-year-old computers.
Green Acres would have very different issues nowadays.
It's all on Facebook now. The farm, right?
Farmville, it's exactly right. Farmville.
Green Acreville.
Yeah, that's what they need. Farmville living is the place for me. All right. I should read this news item because this now speaks directly to Bob. President Obama may still be facing many questions over the NSA surveillance efforts of phone and internet users, but he's moving forward with another government technology effort that's not likely to draw quite as much controversy. In an executive order announced yesterday, the president issued a memorandum ordering the government to free up a huge chunk of the wireless spectrum currently reserved for federal agencies and use it to expand wireless broadband internet access for individuals across the country. So good luck, Bob. These efforts will provide access to more spectrum for wireless broadband providers and equipment vendors as they respond to increasingly rapid consumer adoption of smartphones, tablets, and other wireless devices, reads a White House fact sheet on the new initiative. The government will be awarding $100 million for researching new spectrum sharing plans through agencies including DARPA and the National Science Foundation. But don't expect wireless service to improve in the near term. According to the president's order, the Department of Commerce, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, and the FCC have to come up with a plan for how to open up government-controlled spectra within 10 years. To get to that point, the Commerce Department has to come up with its own plan in 6 months for what regulations will be needed to be lifted or adjusted. Then, a year after that, the other agencies involved have to specifically state how their spectra are currently being used or not, and areas that could be opened up to the commercial and non-governmental sectors. The move comes on the heels of another recent push by the White House to beef up broadband access in schools. What would you do with more wireless spectrum? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's still kind of set.
We were hoping Google was going to buy that last big
Google
auction.
Why are you not in Rochester? We do have Greenlight Technologies. I have to call them. I have been meaning to. God, life wasn't time designed specifically so that not everything happens at once. Apparently not. But Greenlight Technologies in Rochester, they're doing fiber to the home, and I should call them and have somebody come on the show and talk about the problems with that last mile to the home.
But apparently, there is a lot of fiber in Rochester. It's just not being used. And
huge amounts of fiber.
When we call up and ask about it to whatever telco or cable co that does it, it's ridiculously expensive.
Well, there's an actual map on the Monroe County website. If you were to Google Monroe County fiber, you would find there they have hundreds of miles of fiber on their website, fiber's not actually on their website. The map showing the hundreds of miles of fiber is on their website, there it is: the existing municipal fiber optic network.
150 miles currently existing, and 150 miles under construction.
Yeah, and what are we doing with it? It goes right past my street. It goes right past my street.
I think it goes by my street, too.
See that? it's everywhere. It's like this octopus. It's Cthulhu getting its arms around Monroe County. And we're not using it.
It does. It goes right down by my street, too.
See that? It goes right by your street. I could spit and hit that wire. Well, maybe I could run and spit and hit the wire. It's about three houses away. I think Monroe County needs to call up Google and say, here's our fiber. Give us Google Fiber to the home. Done. It would be great for this town to be able to go to businesses and say, oh yes, you can get gigabit to any building here, and therefore your company would be better off coming to Rochester. But we don't do that, and I don't know why. And I think it needs to happen now.
Other communities are doing that. They're pushing, Ontario County ran high-speed internet, pretty much right down Main Street in Canandaigua, and they're using that to draw in a lot of businesses. You've got this super municipal internet access available, but then we hear in some communities, the local telco and cable co sue the government, the town, for restraint of trade, basically. Philadelphia was one of the first big ones. The city of Philadelphia tried to lay municipal fiber, and their local telco said, you can't do that. You're restraining our monopoly.
Yeah,
we have a monopoly. You can't do that.
Yes, right. Basically, that's what they said. Well, it's never about us. It's always about them. And so that's, I guess, the way those things
money.
Work.
Money.
It's all about the money. It's all about the money. Which is too bad. We would love to be able to do that. My daughter currently is in Japan because she can be, apparently. They took the six smartest kids in the school, apparently, and took them to the university where she's at, and they took them to Japan. And the connectivity over there is ludicrous.
Yeah, we hear that.
It's gigabit everywhere.
The crappy hotel has 100 megabit.
Yes, yes, yes. We're a third world country when it comes to connectivity. Japan, way ahead of Korea.
She's going to try
Korea is ahead of us.
She's going to try out for Sasuke?
Let's move on. But yeah, so that's the deal, and it is too bad that we are so far behind the times. And I get it; we were first, so our stuff is old, and therefore can't go on. And you can't just replace everything immediately because that might cut a dollar off the profits. Of the companies, and it's not about the long term, it's about the short term. I really do get that. We are not the customer of any publicly held company. The customer is the shareholder. And so we are not the customer of the communications companies. I do understand that. I get it.
They have to make us users happy.
No, they don't. Where else are we going
to
go?
Well, to generate the profits
where
that the customers like.
Go?
Yeah. Well, that was one of the quotes on Stop the Cap, a locally run website that tracks internet usage and outages and overages. Apparently, someone at Time Warner said people don't want faster internet because they're not paying for the faster internet we have. Yeah, you can get 50 megabit internet from Time Warner, and it's ridiculously expensive.
Yes, very expensive.
In other cities, well, Topeka, Kansas.
Topeka, Kansas.
You know, you get a gigabit for $50 a month.
Yep. And I would be happy to pay that. I would happily pay $50 a month for gigabit internet.
But not for 50 megabit.
Right.
Actually, right now, we pay $50 a month for 10 megabit.
Right. Right.
Yep.
So that's the difference. That's the difference. And that's why I would like to see. Because what Google is doing is disruptive, and that's only good for the consumer. You know, and I don't care if it's Google or somebody else. I really don't care. But because it's disruptive, that ends up being good for us. And I like it when things are good for us. That's simple enough.
Yep.
Competition's always good.
Competition is the best. It's what makes America strong. So if you don't like competition, you're anti-American. Sorry.
And the terrorists win.
The terrorists win. That's actually my voicemail. It says, I'm sorry I'm not available. Leave a message or the terrorists win. So people are always saying, I had to leave a message because I didn't want the terrorists to win. So call me.
Yep.
Okay, I get it. That's the way that works. Listen, we're going to take a break from this nonsense. And when we come back, the theory is we'll actually be doing stuff that relates to computers. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with Steve Ray, Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites. I should read this.
To the guy in the chat room who said that the Ustream feed colors were off. It looks fine at my end. Looks fine on my other device where I'm reading the stream in. We're thinking maybe your monitor has an issue.
Yeah, maybe it might be him, or it might be just the connection from where he is. Losing definition, slower connection. On Thursday, Microsoft announced a strategic partnership with Best Buy and Future Shop. The company plans to build Windows stores in 500 Best Buy locations across the U.S. and more than 100 Best Buy and Future Shop locations in Canada, launching from late June through September. The naming choice of Windows stores is confusing. First of all, the Windows Store, singular, is Microsoft's App Store. And secondly, these locations will essentially be Microsoft stores, given that they are to feature a range of products and accessories, including Windows tablets and PCs, Windows phones, but also Microsoft Office, Xbox, and more, they say.
Heaven forbid people go in to buy a window.
Exactly.
Microsoft. We run into that, too, with people wanting to buy apples and apple cider in the users group. Yeah.
Right. Microsoft says these will be the premier destination for consumers to see, try, compare, and purchase its products. The Windows stores inside of Best Buy and Future Shop will range in size from 1,500 square feet to 2,200 square feet, according to Microsoft. Each store will feature an innovation space, highlighting a variety of Windows scenarios across devices, a showcase section with the latest Windows-based PC form factors, ultrabooks, convertibles, detachables, all-in-ones, portable devices, et cetera, as well as a standalone area for just the Microsoft Surface. The Windows Store offers a large-scale hands-on custom... Oh, excuse me, it's a Microsoft statement. The Windows Store offers a large-scale hands-on customer experience that will show customers how Windows and Microsoft devices and services can make it easier for them to work and play, said Tammy Reller, Chief Marketing Officer and Chief Financial Officer of the Windows Division at Microsoft.
We're pleased to partner with Best Buy in bringing the latest technologies to consumers at scale in a unique environment where they can explore how Microsoft products fit together across entertainment, travel, music, and other scenarios. The partnership will also expand the number of Microsoft specialists already working across Best Buy and Future Shop locations. More than 1,200 Microsoft-trained associates, which is about two per location, will be handling these new Windows stores. So, are you breathless with anticipation for the Windows stores? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I have to say, or I will eventually be able to say, this is not a bad idea, and here's why. When we hear about, read about, see about the Google tablets, the Windows tablets with RT and Surface and all this other stuff, you think, yeah. But when you play with them, it's an entirely different experience. You still may not be sold, but you will be impressed in what they've done.
Sometimes you just don't get it from right. reading about it.
Right. So if they have them available to play with, and not just that because they're there now, but also people who can explain it to you and shape. It's all about selling, right? So if they can shape your experience in the store so that you have a better, more interest in getting it, that's all to the good for them. I think that's... that's a very smart move on their part. And we're better than Best Buy, which is really who else is left who's basically a big national electronics retailer.
Yeah, aren't very many left. And what's interesting is over the years we've seen, well, how long ago? 10 years ago was it? Gateway started their own internal stores and then made their own standalone stores, and they're gone. Dell has tried the same thing. Apple tried the same thing for a while with CompUSA. Apple, direct Apple employees were used inside the CompUSA. They called it store within a store. And that didn't work as well as they'd hoped, and they started doing their own physical retail stores. The Microsoft is kind of going the opposite way. They have a few of their own physical retail stores, and now they're going into the other electronic stores, which is interesting because companies like Best Buy and Future Shop is big on the West Coast. They already have a huge selection of Windows PCs, but the question has always been, what does Microsoft have to sell? Microsoft doesn't sell a PC, you know, the Xbox and the game consoles and whatnot. We've actually started seeing on television Windows logos covering up a manufacturer logo on PCs. From Microsoft's standpoint, yeah, if there's a Dell logo or a Toshiba logo, you know, it's running Windows, but Microsoft is losing on that brand recognition.
Right.
So a Windows branded PC is something a lot of people expect Microsoft to sell. And the first bit of that is the Surface. The Windows Surface is a Microsoft branded tablet and mobile PC. The Surface Pro, you know, it's hard to say what it is. It's not quite a netbook. It's not a tablet. The weird thing is Surface is a tablet, like an iPad or an Android tablet. But Surface Pro is a touch-enabled PC. It's a full Windows PC rather than the Windows RT tablet OS. So us tech people have a hard time figuring out what it is. Heaven forbid right. a consumer walks into a store and they want a Microsoft tablet to run Windows. Oh,
well,
and
but a consumer yeah. isn't going to be hung up by the label.
Right.
The consumer's going to look and say, the tablet is nice, it's fast, and I can click it into a keyboard. Right. How freaking cool is that? I'll get one.
And then this one's $400 and this one's $1,000. And whatever, we have talked about spiffs in the past, so whatever one the salesperson gets the biggest kickback on is what they're going to push. But the Microsoft was running a commercial against the iPad, and one of the things they're saying is that the Surface Pro can run a Microsoft Office, and the iPad can't, but it can run a dozen Microsoft Office compatible programs, just not Microsoft branded Office.
Well,
so this week Microsoft announced Office Mobile for iPhone, Microsoft branded
yep.
Microsoft Office for iPhone, not iPad, because then right. they can't run the commercial anymore.
Right, right, but
the reality is that very few people care anymore
right.
whose name is on it. If I can run LibreOffice and share with people running Microsoft Office and people running whatever
yep.
you can, you know, NeoOffice or whatever, or the work iWork. Nobody cares anymore. What's important to people is getting the work done.
Yep.
And that's only bad for companies like Microsoft. Because, for example, if I can get Google Apps for $50 a year per person in my company, and we can do everything we need to do, I don't care if it's not branded Microsoft.
And we think that's one of the issues and one of the reasons why Microsoft has gone with the Office 365 subscription, where if you had to buy Microsoft Office at, well, it used to be $400 per PC. They've at least dropped that to 100 and 150.
Right.
Then that's a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
Especially in businesses and home users. So now being able to say Office 365 is $10 a month and you can put it on 5 computers in your house, that's a lot more palatable to people.
Right.
They don't realize that if they stop paying, all their programs quit working and all the documents stop working.
Right. And in fact, you can have Google Docs for free.
Yep.
If you want it in a business and with all the apps and the blah, 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 it's more. But if you just want Google Docs, it's free. Just sign up for a Gmail account and bang, you get Drive. And you can do Google Docs and spreadsheets and everything. What's weird is they all do everything except databases. I don't know why none of them do databases.
Well, in the spreadsheet app, you can do lists. And that is a database. And that's
no, it isn't. It's a list.
It's a list. But that's what average people want in a database.
Maybe. But they all do, you know, you can do all of that stuff.
Because Access is a huge moneymaker for Microsoft.
Oh, my God.
Because they make they make so many changes in every version that none of the old databases work. And so all the Access developers have to rewrite the whole database.
That is so true. It's easier to stay.
We run into a lot of customers that are still running really old PCs, running really old OSs, so they can run their really old Access database.
Yep. Yep. I have seen that myself.
Even some of our Mac customers, they're running a virtual Windows 98 so they can run their Access 2 database.
And you can't convince them to move it.
Right. Well, because there's a lot of programming cost and in essence rewriting the whole thing to a modern program, either web or another database.
Man, if I were there...
And there's no export.
Yes.
There's no export.
If I were their tech people, every time I looked at that, in the back of my head, I would hear tick. Tick,
yep.
Tick, tick, waiting for that bomb to go off. It's like the crocodile, and I'm Captain Hook. I can just hear it going, tick, tick.
I do have to go in every couple of months and restore from backup because it corrupted itself. What's crazy is for this one customer, right on the main login screen, it's a contact database, so it's easy enough to rewrite in another program, but all the old data. Right on the main login screen, there's a repair database button. So the guy knew how vulnerable and susceptible to damage the database was that he put a repair button right on the front screen.
You should be able to write it out as a CSV, move it into something else, move it into a real database.
There's no export. There's no save as. There's no. I can't get into the code.
Code at all.
Yep, it's a standalone app. There's no. I suppose if I could find the version of Access it was written in and open it in Access rather than its standalone app.
Well, you could try OpenOffice, LibreOffice.
Yeah, one of those can do Access now, can't it?
Yeah.
Old Accesses.
Yeah. Can't hurt to try that. You make a copy of the database, so you're not taking their data, and if you screw it up, it doesn't matter because it's a copy, and then you fool around with it and see what you can make out of it because it just... It would scare me to think my data were in something that old.
Yep. Every now and then we say, you get an intern just to sit there and retype stuff. That might be cheaper than having it rewritten.
Yep. Yep. And there are contact programs available all over the place that are pre-written for you now.
Yep.
You don't even have to write them unless there's something really, really, really weird about your contact system. You don't even have to worry about that.
It was kind of a forward-thinking program at the time. It would let you scan your paper originals into the contact database. So in addition to typing up notes, you could scan contracts in.
And nothing wrong with that.
10-year-old database, that was pretty good.
That's pretty doggone good, actually.
So now you get a neat scanner, and bingo, and you're done.
And you're done, exactly. But that's one of the real problems with these things, is there are legacy programs that people are using, and they don't see the benefit. I'm not saying there is no benefit. I'm saying they don't see the benefit in modernizing it because it still works.
Yeah, the guy that called earlier today with the 15-year-old computer.
Yeah, I get it. Believe me when I tell you I get it. I have computers that I have an old computer. It's
20
a Toshiba.
Years old.
Yeah. It's this thin little, gorgeous little Toshiba. It's got 16 meg of RAM.
And that was expanded, probably.
And a 386 processor. I can still run damn small Linux or Puppy Linux on it and run things like Word Grinder and all kinds of stuff to do word processing and anything else on it. And really, do you need more for most of the stuff you do? Well, if you want to get on the web and play games and blah, 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 blah. But if what you're doing is taking notes, that'll do it. I have no idea how you would get those out to anywhere else. But I get it. You know, if that thing still works, if it suits your need, why go on from there? I get it. I do.
Yep. If it works, don't fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you wait too long, then you're not going to find the parts you need when you want to get a new something or other.
Right. Well, in the meantime, I will read another news item. I've got a couple minutes yet before we have to take a break, so I'll do that. Thousands, you might have heard a little something about this. Thousands of technology, finance, and manufacturing companies are working closely with the United States national security agencies, providing sensitive information in return, receiving benefits that include access to classified intelligence. These programs, whose participants are known as trusted partners, extend far beyond what was revealed by Edward Snowden, a computer technician who did work for the National Security Agency. The role of private companies has come under intense scrutiny since his disclosure that the NSA is collecting millions of U.S. residents' telephone records and the computer communications of foreigners from internet companies under court order. Many of these same internet and telecommunications companies voluntarily provide U.S. intelligence organizations with additional data, such as equipment specifications that don't involve private communications of their customers. Makers of hardware and software, banks, internet security providers, satellite telecommunications companies, and many other companies are also participating in the government programs. In many cases, the information gathered may be used not just to defend the nation, but to help infiltrate computers of its adversaries. Along with the NSA, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and branches of the U.S. military have agreements with such companies to gather data that might seem innocuous, but could be highly useful in the hands of U.S. intelligence or cyber warfare units, according to the people who have either worked for the government or in companies that have these accords. Microsoft, the world's largest software company, provides intelligence agencies with information about bugs in its popular software before it publicly releases a fix. That information can be used to protect government computers and to access the computers of terrorists or military foes. The one thing that makes me hopeful for the war on terror is that the terrorists are using Windows. Microsoft and other software internet companies have been aware that this type of early alert allowed the U.S. to exploit vulnerabilities in software sold to foreign governments. Microsoft doesn't ask and can't be told how the government uses such tip-offs. Frank Shaw, a spokesrobot for Microsoft, said that those releases occur in a cooperation with multiple agencies and are designed to give government an early start on risk assessment and mitigation. So does any of this make you feel any better about your data being, let's call it, shared? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And while you do that, we're going to take a quick break. But we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, with Linda Wildman, with me, Nick Francesco, and with all of you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You continue, for no discernible reason, to listen to Soundbites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Linda Wildman.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can call us, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And here's a timely bit of news. Tech giants Hewlett-Packard and Google just announced a plan in which they will join forces under the banner of Google Apps. HP has become a Google Apps reseller and will package management tools with its PCs, printers, and other IT gear. One extra thing that HP brings to the table is some management software that will simplify setup. And there's no better way to kill a product than let HP write software for it. It's the latest move on the chessboard by HP to get a little closer to Google. And it is interesting in light of the fact that Microsoft has both been building its own hardware, the Surface, and also cozying up to HP rival Dell with a $2 billion loan to help finance its $24.4 billion leveraged buyout. The move is also taking place against the background of HP's further embrace of Android and Chrome-based hardware. It just added a second Chromebook to its line of notebooks and also offers an Android-based tablet. But of course, it's not really about that if you ask HP execs. It's about giving our customers what they want, HP's Ron Coughlin, Senior VP for Consumer PCs and Solutions, said. Actually, we've been looking at our entire portfolio and asking how we can deliver a holistic solution to small and medium businesses. It will start rolling out in July. Google is getting something pretty attractive out of the deal, too. HP's considerable relationships in the channel, the network of third-party resellers that offer customized packages of products to businesses. You might say there was some excitement on Google's part at the prospect of Apple of their apps being offered in the HP channel. Google's apps, in case you've forgotten, is the internet giant's suite of cloud-based office applications that include a word processor and a spreadsheet and graphics programs and name it, everything. It's a file storage service, everything. Google said more than 5 million small businesses use it, and indeed, it's created a sufficiently competitive threat to Office that Microsoft launched its own cloud-based variant called Office 365. Coughlin wouldn't drill down on this, but it doesn't take much to imagine more HP hardware, servers, networking gear, for example, being added to this combined package to make the deployment and management of Google Apps a lot easier in the small business environment. All I can say is, watch this space, he said. So are you excited about a partnership between HP and Google? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's one of those things where HP is scaling back from being a computer company and moving to a services company. Dell is doing pretty much the same thing. Michael Dell trying to take the company private. Of course, everyone in the Mac community is saying the irony of that is 10 years ago when Apple was having its trouble, Dell said, they should just close up shop and give the money back to the customers.
Right.
Well, that's what Dell's doing now.
Right.
Himself, yep. But moving away from being a computer company, the margins in the computer industry are so razor thin. I think when we used to sell Dell computers, we had a 2% margin, and that didn't cover the 20 minutes we spent talking to someone about what computer they wanted.
I tell you, I got out at the right time.
Yep.
I really did. Well, and that's the problem. If you are primarily a hardware company, you, I think, cannot exist outside of the low-end China making your computers in sweatshops with 10-year-olds.
Right.
It just can't be done.
As cheaply as possible.
It just can't be done because the margins are so thin. And you have to sell so many billions of them. And the market is so wide nowadays. What do you buy? When there were two or three companies selling into the home market, Apple could sell at 40% margins and everything was great and blah, 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 blah. Now, when there's 600,000 different companies out there selling products and every product is this close to every other product, people are buying specifically on cost.
We hear, and what we see at our shop, that people have trouble deciding between the, you know, the three different laptop lines that Apple sells. You walk into a PC, you know, sales shop, and there's 15 manufacturers, and each manufacturer has 30 models.
Right.
And then you go to the other store, and you see the same manufacturers, but 30 different models, because they make a model for each store. And sometimes they're $20 difference in price. Yep. How do you decide among 20 different machines that are so very close together?
Well,
and I want the red one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's what it becomes.
Really what it comes down to. It's exactly what it comes down to. What saddens me is people always say, well, you like the Chromebook. I want a Chromebook. Because they're only $250, right, and they do everything. No, they don't actually do everything. Well, you know, I want to be able to play video games. Okay, which video games? So some of them you can play.
Angry Birds.
You can play Angry Birds. My wife has discovered you can play Castleville, that she's playing now. That's okay. But if you want to play like World of Warcraft or you know, anything along that line, ain't going to happen. I want to do, all I do is browse the web and edit my own audio.
Yeah.
You know?
We've gotten caught by that a few times at our store. Someone's, I only want to browse the web. So, you know, we sell them a low-end computer.
Sure.
And then they come back and say, well, this game isn't working right.
Right.
You didn't say you wanted to play games. Or it turns out it's a web game.
Right.
Which, okay, you need often need Flash for that.
Now
and
what?
And you need a newer browser. And so,
right.
Okay.
Right, right. And so it becomes a problem. If you want to live in it's not a very narrow stricture of what the Chromebook can do, then a Chromebook is an exceptional piece of equipment. But if you want to do something, it's like saying, well, I only want to drive to the store and pick up one bag of groceries on Sundays, except that I'm also moving all my friends' apartments, and oh, by the way, I want to hit the racetrack on the weekend. Well, no, you're not. First, you're probably not even buying one car for all of that, but you're certainly not buying the same car that you can putter to the grocery store and buy a bag of groceries with on Monday and then take it to Le Mans on Saturday. It's not going to be the same car. You can't do both, and people kind of understand that when it comes to cars. Although, God knows, everybody who sells cars sells you something that's great for the family and has 420 horsepower. But you can do that. You can understand that with cars. People don't understand that about computers. Computers should be able to do everything. No. If you buy the low-end putter to the store and buy one bag of groceries laptop, it is not going to be the same laptop that you use to move your friends, and it is not going to be the same laptop you take to Le Mans. It just is not. And people need to get over that, and they need to understand all of what they want to do. It's always been the hardest thing when you say to somebody, what do you want to do with it? Because they haven't thought it out.
Yeah.
They don't know what they want to do to it with it, and they don't think about all the things they do.
Yeah, I hear from a lot of people and reading in the car blogs, you know, people go into the dealership and they want an economical car. They want good gas mileage, but they want that V8 engine and they want the, you know, third row seats. And
right.
So every little thing you decided you wanted, you lost.
Right. Well, that's why I drive a Nissan Cube. What I wanted was good gas mileage and a car that I liked driving. I don't need to go, although I have a heavy foot and I completely completely admit that. I need a car that makes me humble because I don't get tickets when I have a car that makes me humble. I admit that too. But, you know, it's the car that I wanted. And I know I'm not going to take that car to Le Mans.
No, you could. You
could
laugh
at that. I could take it to Le Mans. I could take it to Le Mans. I can't take it on the track at Le Mans. But
too bad it doesn't have a retractable top.
Yeah,
then you could take it.
Okay. There was an episode of the American Top Gear where the guys the challenge was to make a taxi cab, and so of course Tanner Faust, the race car driver host on the show, took it. It wasn't a cube, but was a little tiny car like that, and put $10,000 worth of racing engine in it. So you could do 150 with it.
Well, and people used to do that. It's kind of a reverse snobbery thing.
Yep.
People used to buy Volkswagens and put Porsche engines in them because they fit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you buy a chance. Well, that's actually big in the racing world. If you watch Fast and Furious, you buy a cheap little, you know, Econobox car. You know, it's like 10 grand for the car and 20 grand for the upgrades.
Right.
And you put this giant engine in it, and a giant engine and a light car means really fast.
Yep. Yep. And I understand that, you know, I get that, but that's now costing even more. Nowadays, what we want is exactly that for a couple of $100. And it just doesn't happen, you know? The Chromebook is not the fastest computer on the market. It's not going to play any of the high-end games. You're not going to be editing video on it, any high-end video. You're not going to be editing high-end audio. You can do a little bit of it, a little bit of everything, but it's not going to be a big thing. But people don't get it, you know? They look at a $250 computer, and it's got an aluminum case like a Mac, which is what, $1,200 or $1,500. And they say, well, it's got to be the same because, look, it's 13 inches. It's 13 inches.
It looks the same.
Aluminum case. It's an aluminum case. It must be the same thing. So we'll just get that for, you know, Apple's clearly ripping us off, and we'll just spend the $250. Well, you don't see the other $1,000, $10,000 in the computer. You just don't see it. It's not that it isn't there. You just it's under the hood.
Yeah, you can get a Ford or you can get a BMW.
Right,
same thing, right? They drive you to the store.
So what you're gonna do with them, you know? It's if you're gonna get the Porsche, then you know you're gonna pay for the Porsche. That's simple enough.
Yep.
There's a guy in a bright red Thunderbird convertible, 1960s convertible in front of me. I was kind of impressed because it was only 68 degrees and he had the top down, and I thought, how intense is your midlife crisis that you have to have the top down at 68 degrees when you're driving on the expressway?
Because you can.
Exactly. I get it. I do.
I ran into a place out in Victor where they you can rent a Ferrari and just take it out for a test drive. And I was reading some of the restrictions, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah. You can't get it out of second gear. That's first.
Yeah. And, you know, it's $400 an hour for...
Yeah.
For renting the car, yeah.
My cousin had a Porsche 922 that I got to drive once. Holy moly. Wowie. All right, that music means that Linda is forcing us to stop talking to you now. It's her fault entirely. We've wasted another 2 hours of precious airtime here at Jazz 90.1. The day is not over, however. George is about to come in and play the best German music you will hear all week long. So stay tuned. It's going to be great. And we'll be back here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Haven't said that in years. With a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are joyous to be able to say we're on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.